Before we start today's episode, I need to mention that everything you're about to hear is entirely AI-generated, including our voices. This episode is brought to you by Flowdesk Pro, the fictional standing desk that adjusts to your emotional state throughout the day. And please remember that some details we discuss might be inaccurate, so double-check anything important before acting on it. Sarah, and today we're diving into Michael Watkins' The First 90 Days, a book that's become the go-to guide for anyone starting a new leadership role. With me is David Chen, a leadership consultant who's used this book with hundreds of executives over the past decade.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. I've probably recommended this book more than any other in my practice.
Let's start with the obvious question. Why do the first 90 days matter so much?
Watkins makes a compelling case that your success or failure in a new role is largely determined in those first 3 months. It's when you form relationships, establish credibility, and set the trajectory for everything that follows.
But surely people can recover from a rough start, right?
They can, but Watkins shows it's exponentially harder. He talks about how first impressions create a kind of momentum. If people see you as effective early on, they give you more latitude and support later.
What's Watkins' background that makes him qualified to write about this?
He spent years at Harvard Business School studying leadership transitions and worked with countless executives making these moves. But what's powerful is that he went through his own difficult transition that almost derailed his career.
Tell me about that personal experience.
He joined a company and made classic mistakes. He tried to change too much too fast, didn't build the right relationships, and misread the political landscape. It was a humbling experience that shaped his entire approach.
So this isn't just academic theory.
Exactly. The book combines research with hard-won personal lessons and patterns he's seen repeated across industries and levels of leadership.
What problem was Watkins trying to solve when he wrote this?
He saw that most organizations throw new leaders into roles without any systematic support for the transition. People get promoted or hired based on their track record, then they're expected to figure it out on their own.
And that doesn't work?
Not reliably. Watkins cites research showing that 40% of senior executives fail within their first 18 months. That's a staggering waste of talent and resources.
So what's his central thesis about how to avoid that fate?
The core idea is that successful transitions require a systematic approach. You can't just rely on your past success or good intentions. You need specific strategies for each phase of the transition.
When you say systematic, what does that mean exactly?
Watkins argues that every transition involves predictable challenges: building credibility, understanding the culture, forming the right team, creating coalitions. These aren't random events. They're things you can plan for and execute deliberately.
That sounds almost mechanical. Is leadership really that formulaic?
That's a great pushback. Watkins isn't saying leadership itself is mechanical, but that the process of establishing yourself as a leader can be approached systematically. The relationships and decisions are still very human.
What was the conventional wisdom before this book that Watkins was challenging?
Prevailing view is that good leaders would naturally succeed in new roles. There was this idea that if you performed well in your last job, you'd figure out the new one through instinct and experience.
And Watkins disagreed with that?
Completely. He shows that each new role is fundamentally different, even if it looks similar on paper. The stakeholders, culture, challenges, and expectations create a unique puzzle that requires specific preparation.
How does this book fit into the broader leadership literature?
Most leadership books focus on steady-state leadership, how to motivate teams, make decisions, communicate vision. This book addresses the overlooked challenge of how you get to the point where those skills can actually work.
It's about the transition itself, not just the end state.
Exactly. And Watkins shows that the skills you need during transition are often different from the ones you need once you're established. Sometimes they're even contradictory.
Let's dive into his framework. What's the first major concept he introduces?
STARS model, which categorizes 5 different types of business situations you might inherit: startup, turnaround, accelerated growth, realignment, and sustaining success.
Why does this distinction matter?
Because the same leadership approach that works brilliantly in a turnaround can be disastrous in a sustaining success situation. You need to diagnose which situation you're in before you can choose the right strategy.
Can you give me a concrete example of how these might differ?
Sure. In a turnaround, you might need to make rapid, dramatic changes and communicate a sense of urgency. People expect and even welcome disruption because they know the current path isn't working.
And in a sustaining success situation?
You'd approach it completely differently. The organization is performing well, so your job is to maintain momentum while making careful improvements. Coming in and shaking things up would be seen as reckless and destructive.
That makes sense. Are these categories always clear-cut?
Not at all. Watkins acknowledges that you might inherit a mix. Maybe your division needs a turnaround while the company overall is in sustaining mode. Or different parts of your organization are in different situations.
How do you figure out which situation you're really in?
Watkins emphasizes the importance of early diagnosis. You look at performance trends, competitive position, organizational health, and stakeholder expectations. But you also have to be careful not to accept the official story at face value.
What do you mean by the official story?
Sometimes you're told you're inheriting a sustaining success situation, but when you dig deeper, you discover underlying problems that require realignment or even turnaround thinking.
So part of your early work is investigative.
Absolutely. Watkins talks about the importance of getting multiple perspectives and looking for patterns in what you hear. One person's view might be skewed by their position or agenda.
Let's talk about another key framework. What's his approach to the first 30, 60, and 90 days?
He breaks it into phases with different priorities. The first 30 days are about learning and building relationships. Days 30 to 60 focus on developing your strategy and building coalitions. The final 30 days are about implementation and establishing momentum.
That seems like a tight timeline. Is 30 days really enough for the learning phase?
Watkins isn't saying you stop learning after 30 days, but he argues you need to start making decisions and taking action relatively quickly, even with incomplete information. People are watching and judging your effectiveness from day one.
How do you balance learning with the pressure to show results?
This is one of the key tensions he addresses. You look for early wins that don't require deep organizational knowledge, but still demonstrate your capability and create positive momentum.
Can you give me an example of what an early win might look like?
Maybe you notice that two departments aren't communicating well about a recurring issue. You facilitate a solution that doesn't require major changes, but improves everyone's daily work. It shows you're paying attention and can make things better.
So it's about picking your spots carefully.
Watkins warns against early wins that create long-term problems. You might fix something quickly, but undermine someone's authority or set expectations you can't sustain.
Let's talk about building relationships. What's his specific approach there?
He emphasizes mapping your stakeholder network early. Who are the key influencers? What do they care about? How do they prefer to communicate? You're essentially creating a relationship strategy.
Sounds quite calculated. Does that come across as inauthentic?
It's not about being fake or manipulative. It's about being intentional. You're going to build relationships anyway, so why not think strategically about how to do it effectively?
What does that look like in practice?
You might schedule one-on-one meetings with key stakeholders in your first few weeks. But instead of just introducing yourself, you come prepared with thoughtful questions about their priorities and challenges.
What kinds of questions work well?
Watkins suggests asking about the biggest opportunities and challenges they see, what they'd like to see changed, and what they hope you won't change. You're gathering intelligence while showing you value their perspective.
How do you handle conflicting perspectives from different stakeholders?
That's inevitable, and Watkins treats it as valuable information rather than a problem. When stakeholders disagree, that tells you something important about the organizational dynamics and competing priorities.
Let's dive deeper into team building. What's his framework there?
He talks about evaluating your inherited team systematically. You assess each person's competence and commitment, then decide whether to keep, coach, or replace them. But he warns against making these decisions too quickly.
How long should you wait before making personnel decisions?
Watkins suggests you need enough time to see people in different situations and understand how the current context might be affecting their performance. Someone who looks ineffective might just be in the wrong role or lacking support.
But presumably, you can't wait forever.
Oh, and he acknowledges that timeline pressure is real. The key is gathering enough information to make informed decisions while not letting obvious mismatches drag on indefinitely.
What about when you need to let someone go? How do you handle that early in your tenure?
Watkins emphasizes doing it quickly and cleanly once you've made the decision. Delaying just creates uncertainty for everyone and can undermine your credibility. But you have to handle the process with respect and transparency.
How do you build credibility while making tough personnel decisions?
He suggests focusing on fairness and communication. People need to understand your reasoning and see that you're making decisions based on clear criteria, not politics or personal preference.
Let's talk about creating coalitions. Why is this so important?
Watkins argues that most significant changes require support from people who don't report to you. You need peers, senior leaders, and influential team members to actively support your initiatives.
How do you identify who needs to be in your coalition?
You map the influence network around your key goals. Who has the authority to approve resources? Who could block implementation? Who do others look to for cues about whether to support new initiatives?
And then how do you actually build that coalition?
It starts with understanding what each person cares about and how your success can serve their interests. You're looking for genuine alignment, not just trying to convince people to help you.
Can you walk me through a specific example?
Say, you want to implement a new customer feedback system. You might need IT support for the technology, sales cooperation for data collection, and finances approval for the budget. Each group has different concerns and motivations.
So you'd approach each differently?
Exactly. With IT, you might emphasize how the system will integrate with existing tools. With sales, you'd focus on how better feedback will help them serve customers. With finance, you'd stress the ROI and cost control measures.
That makes sense. What about managing up? How does Watkins approach the relationship with your boss?
He treats this as one of your most critical relationships. You need to understand not just what your boss expects, but how they prefer to work, what makes them successful, and what keeps them up at night.
How do you figure that out without seeming intrusive?
Watkins suggests having explicit conversations about working styles and expectations. Most bosses appreciate when someone asks how they can be most helpful and what communication approach works best.
What are some common mistakes people make with their boss during transitions?
One big one is assuming your boss hired you to do exactly what you did in your last role. They might have different priorities or expect you to grow in specific directions. Another is not keeping them informed about challenges you're facing.
Why is communication about challenges so important?
Your boss doesn't want to be surprised. If they hear about problems from someone else first, it undermines their confidence in your judgment and communication. Watkins emphasizes bringing solutions, not just problems, but being transparent about obstacles.
Now let's get practical. If someone just accepted a new leadership role, what should they do in week one?
First, have a detailed conversation with your boss about expectations and priorities. Then start scheduling those stakeholder meetings I mentioned, but also begin observing the culture and informal networks.
What do you mean by observing culture?
Notice how decisions really get made, what behaviors get rewarded, how conflict is handled. Watkins emphasizes that the official org chart doesn't tell you how things actually work.
How long does it typically take to really understand an organization's culture?
Watkins suggests you can get a working understanding within the first month if you're paying attention. But cultural nuances continue to emerge over time. The key is starting to adapt your approach based on what you learn early on.
What about someone who's been in their role for a few weeks and realizes they've made some early mistakes?
Watkins actually addresses this directly. He says the key is acknowledging mistakes quickly and transparently, then demonstrating you've learned from them. People are often more forgiving than you expect if you own the error.
Can you give me an example of how that might work?
Maybe you pushed for a change too aggressively and created resistance. You might go back to key stakeholders, acknowledge that you moved too fast, and ask for their input on a better approach. It shows humility and adaptability.
What if you're in a situation where you need to make changes, but there's strong resistance to any change?
This is where understanding your star's situation becomes crucial. If you're in a turnaround, you might need to create a sense of urgency by helping people understand the consequences of not changing.
And if it's a realignment situation where the problems aren't obvious?
That's much harder. Watkins talks about the importance of building a compelling case for change. You might need to help people see emerging threats or opportunities they haven't recognized yet.
How do you do that without being seen as creating unnecessary drama?
You focus on data and external trends rather than personal opinions. Maybe you bring in customer feedback, competitive analysis, or market research that illustrates the need for evolution.
Let's talk about timelines. How long should someone expect before they see real results from applying these methods?
Watkins suggests you should be able to demonstrate some early progress within the first 90 days, but meaningful organizational change often takes 6 months to a year. The key is setting appropriate expectations with your stakeholders.
What does early progress look like?
It might be improved communication between teams, resolution of a long-standing issue, or a successful pilot project. Something that shows you understand the organization and can make things better.
What are the most common ways people misapply the book's advice?
One big mistake is treating the 90-day framework too rigidly. Some organizations move faster, others slower. You need to adapt the timeline to your specific context while keeping the overall structure.
What other misapplications do you see?
Some people focus too much on the analytical frameworks and not enough on the relationship building. Or they try to implement every suggestion rather than focusing on what's most critical for their situation.
How do you know which advice to prioritize?
It comes back to understanding your specific context. What are the biggest risks to your success? Where are the most important opportunities? Watkins provides tools for diagnosis, but you have to apply them to your unique situation.
What about situations where you don't have much authority or resources? Does the book still apply?
Watkins actually addresses this. Even with limited formal authority, you can still build relationships, understand the landscape, and identify ways to add value. The principles scale, even if the specific tactics change.
Are there types of roles or industries where this approach doesn't work as well?
The book was written primarily for business contexts, so some of the frameworks might need adaptation for nonprofits, academia, or government. But the core insights about transitions are pretty universal.
What about cultural considerations? Does this advice work across different cultures?
It's actually one of the book's limitations. Watkins focuses primarily on American corporate culture. The emphasis on quick wins and individual leadership might not translate directly to more consensus-driven cultures.
Let's step back and evaluate the book critically. What does it do exceptionally well?
Its greatest strength is making transition challenges concrete and actionable. Instead of vague advice about leadership, it gives you specific tools and frameworks you can actually use.
What else stands out as particularly valuable?
The STARS model is genuinely useful. I've seen executives avoid major mistakes by correctly diagnosing their situation early on. And the stakeholder mapping approach has prevented countless relationship problems.
Where does the book fall short?
It can feel formulaic at times. Real leadership transitions are messier and more unpredictable than the frameworks suggest. Sometimes you have to throw out the playbook and rely on judgment and intuition.
What else would you criticize?
The book doesn't spend enough time on emotional and psychological aspects of transitions. Starting a new role is stressful and disorienting, but Watkins treats it mostly as an analytical challenge.
That's a significant gap. How do you handle the emotional side of transitions?
You need other resources for that. The book gives you a framework for action, but you might need coaching, mentoring, or other support systems to deal with the personal challenges of transition.
How does this book compare to other leadership transition resources?
It's more systematic and detailed than most. A lot of other books focus on general leadership principles, but this one is specifically about the transition process. That's both its strength and its limitation.
Are there other books you'd recommend alongside this one?
For the emotional side, maybe something like Transitions by William Bridges. For ongoing leadership skills, books like The Leadership Challenge by Cowes and Posner complement this well.
let's talk about the book's broader impact. How has it influenced corporate culture?
It's become standard reading in many companies. I've seen organizations build their own transition support programs based on Watkins's frameworks. It's made leadership transitions more systematic and less sink or swim.
Has that been a positive development?
Mostly, yes. Fewer good leaders fail due to preventable transition mistakes. But there's also a risk of over-systematizing something that requires adaptation and creativity.
What criticism has the book received over time?
Some people argue it's too focused on individual achievement rather than collaborative leadership. Others say it doesn't account enough for organizational dysfunction that can't be solved by any individual leader.
Those seem like fair criticisms. Has Watkins updated his thinking in response?
He's written follow-up books that address some of these issues, particularly around leading organizational change. But the core framework in the first 90 days remains largely unchanged.
What's changed in leadership transitions since the book was written?
Remote work has made relationship building more challenging. The pace of business has accelerated in many industries, and there's more emphasis on inclusive leadership and cultural sensitivity.
Those changes undermine the book's relevance?
Not really. The core principles still apply, but you might need to adapt the tactics. Building relationships virtually requires different approaches, but it's still essential.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important insight from this book?
Leadership transitions are predictable challenges that require deliberate preparation and systematic execution. Your past success doesn't guarantee future success without the right transition strategy.
And what's the one thing listeners should do differently after hearing this conversation?
If you're starting a new role, spend your first week mapping your stakeholders and understanding your STARS situation before you start making changes. That diagnosis will inform everything else you do.
Any final thoughts on why this book has endured?
It solves a real problem that almost everyone faces multiple times in their career. And it does so with practical tools rather than abstract theory. That combination of relevance and usefulness is pretty powerful.
David, thanks for this deep dive into the first 90 days. For listeners considering their next career move, this conversation should give you a solid foundation for making that transition successfully.
Thanks, Sarah. The key is remembering that transition success isn't about luck or natural talent. It's about having the right framework and executing it thoughtfully.